Hello and welcome to The Ordinary Knitter, the podcast that's mostly about the projects. This week, the podcast is mostly actually about forethought heels. That's going to take up a lot. Broken needles, knitting for animals, and why you should never leave blocking till the last minute. Hello and welcome to episode 15 of The Ordinary Knitter. In the intro I emphasised forethought heels. These forethought heels have, dominated my weekend, I think is a fair description. I had decided to use, I decided to use an afterthought heel as I was referring to it in the pair of socks that I'm making at the moment for my husband, because I just wanted to make a little bit more interesting and set myself to a new task. And in my reading around on afterthought heels, I swiftly discovered that what I had in mind was more accurately called a forethought heel, because as you knit your, essentially your tube sock, you're identifying as you go along with your scrap yarn where the heel is going to be put in once you've finished. So as Louise Tilbrook correctly said on her interesting blog post about it all, that actually makes it a forethought heel, because you're using forethought, you're deciding ahead of time where that heel is going to go. A true afterthought heel is where you've just knitted a tube with absolutely no consideration for where your heel is going to go, and you come along afterwards and you think, yeah, there's about right, and you pick up your stitches and away you go. So this was the plan. So I had knitted the sock past the point, well, socks, because I do them two at a time. I'd knitted them past the point where I would normally start the heel. Usually I do a flegel heel, and I'm very happy with them. I've got no reason to stop using them. This was just sort of for the hell of it, really. And I needed to mark in where I was going to put the afterthought heel. So I tried the sock on my husband's foot and instantly ran into, problems a bit strong, but a slight kind of stone in my shoe, because as the heel hadn't been inserted, obviously by definition, I was really struggling to get this tube over his heel and sort of up the front of his ankle. He has large, wide, flat feet, so they're not the easiest feet in the world to deal with. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I think that's about right. So I stitched that in, and I should, before I go too far on, should say I found a very, very useful blog post, which I will link to in the show notes. It's called Knit Better Socks, and the person who wrote that suggested that before you knit in your scrap yarn, that you insert a lifeline. The point of this is that when you then come to pick up the stitches for knitting the heel, you haven't got to... It makes it easier, put it like that, because all you're doing is just sticking live stitches onto the needle, which, okay, is what you would be doing anyway. But I'm sure you can imagine that if you're simply following the track of a bright contrast yarn to put these stitches onto your needle, that's much easier, well, it is for me anyway, than picking up one leg of each stitch. You should see me, I'm waving my hands around and pretending I'm picking up stitches. Postman will think I'm mad if she comes now. And I thought that was tremendous advice. And then you knit in your scrap yarn, and then you knit your next round, and you put a lifeline in that too. So that means that you've got a lifeline in the set of stitches that connect above and below into the stitches you've knitted with your heel, for your heel yarn. And I've probably garbled it in the description, but reading it and doing it, that made complete sense. And I was hugely, hugely glad that I had done it, as you will come to hear. So I put the bright red yarn in for the heel, I put my two lifelines in, and I carried on knitting a bit. And I wanted to check where I was at on the back of the heel, because as I've talked about before, I knit a pattern all the way around the leg, and I needed to kind of just get a feel for where I was, because I didn't have any of my usual landmarks. And again, I sort of tried to put it on my husband, and I just couldn't gauge where I was at with it all. And I realised, quite simply, I just wasn't going to get on with this. I couldn't wait until afterwards to put the heel in, because I just couldn't tell where I was at with these socks. How far up the leg am I? You know, do I need to do another sort of 3 sets of boxes or another 6 sets of boxes going vertically? And I just didn't like feeling not very anchored as to the geography of my sock. So as the point of the afterthought or forethought heel, well, the forethought heel, I should say, it doesn't matter that you come along and do it afterwards. The point is that you do it separately to the rest of the sock. And just as an aside, I thought it was quite interesting seeing the rationale for doing this. And in fact, it used to be called a peasant heel, because if your sock wore through at the heel, rather than having to just darn it or discard the sock, the heel could simply be taken out and replaced. And I thought that was quite interesting. And looking at the videos and reading the blog posts of people who are real fixed fans of afterthought and forethought heels, it seems also it's popular because you can do an effect. If you're using if you're perhaps doing a fair isle pattern in your sock, or if you're using self-striping yarn, doing the heel separately, you can get particular effects with it. Often you get a kind of a bullseye type effect on the heel, and I can understand why you might want that. But anyway, that sort of makes the point, really, that it's not that you come along and do it when you've literally finished the rest of the sock up to the ribbing for the cuff. It's that you're doing it separately to the main body of the sock. So I just made an executive decision that I was going to just pause where I was and go back and put the heel in, and then I would continue the rest of the sock. So the principle remains the same of putting the heel in separately. So the first thing I needed to do, I've only got one set of 2.75 circulars, which I think is something I'm going to have to remedy at some point. But at the moment, that's the case. I do all my sock knitting on Magic Loop. So the first thing I needed to do was put all the live stitches for the leg of the socks onto either scrap yarn or stitch holders. So first of all, I had to do all that, and I was dropping stitches all over the place. The air was turning blue. Finally succeeded with that. Then I needed to pick up all the stitches that connected to the bottom of the red heel sock yarn, and all the stitches that connected to the top. And it's not particularly easy. You've got tiny stitches on small needles, and now you've got more yarn going through the middle. And if you're using 4-ply yarn to begin with, I don't have any yarn that's thinner than 4-ply. The only thing I could think of that'd be thinner than 4-ply is embroidery thread. Maybe I should have used that, but I was getting really knocked. Considering that knitting's meant to be a sort of genteel and ladylike occupation, well, I don't know about you, but I'm often far from genteel and ladylike, and that was one of those occasions. Anyway, finally, in the end, I had to find an incredibly thin needle, sort of the ones kind of thing I was talking about quite a few episodes ago when I first started building up my needle collection. I bought bamboo, and I soon discovered that, you know, bamboo just doesn't really work for really thin needles. It just hasn't got the strength. And I was accidentally breaking needles because, you know, I just didn't realise that I was exerting too much pressure, more pressure than the needle could cope with. But I still have a few of these. And so what I was ending up doing was I was putting the stitches onto these tiny needles, because they were the only things I could really get that fitted between the lifeline and the live stitch, and then transferring them onto the actual needles I was going to use for the knitting. My God, what a faff! I honestly, and I must confess, still now, I don't see why anybody would put themselves through this if they didn't have to. Again, I was dropping stitches, so I was having to pick those up. Oh, it was a total nightmare. And because I was using every spare needle I could get my hands on, I found some 2.75s DPNs, but they're long DPNs, which has come in quite useful on a number of occasions. And I was sort of putting these stitches onto those, because stupidly I decided to do that before I had taken my circulars off the live stitches at the top of the leg. That was simply stupid and not a mistake I will make on the second sock. But of course, so I had no flexibility because I had no cables in them. They were rigid needles, and oh, it was a total nightmare. I had needles everywhere, and I had stitch markers holding the stitches I dropped, which I had to then deal with as I came to it. Oh, I was banging my head off the table. It was a total nightmare. Anyway, I then discovered that I couldn't actually get the heel yarn out. I couldn't believe it. Everything was just completely gummed up together. And I obviously made a big mistake somewhere, somehow, in this, either the setup of knitting it, although I don't really see how, or the setup of coming to pick up the stitches and take the scrap yarn out. I ended up having to get the end of a tapestry needle and winkling each stitch out one by one, which did nothing to improve my mood on the whole business. Eventually, I got to the point where I had my circular needles into the working heel stitches, and I had all my leg stitches, live leg stitches, taken care of one way and another, and I started to create the heel. And I found a very useful Knit Purl Hunter video showing how to avoid getting that little hole, and that little hole on the heel is one of the reasons why I stopped using a standard heel flap method and started using the Flegel heel, because you never get a hole with the Flegel heel, because you never sort of stop your standard knitting in the round, you just carry on, you just use short rows to shape the heel. So now I've got to the point last night, I'm down to 12 stitches on each needle, and a little bit later on I will kitchener those shut, and then I will do everything all over again on the second sock. But by then I will have learnt to get my circulars free off the top of the socks first, and well, of course I've had to do that anyway, because my socks, the two always go on the same pair of circulars. I had to take the live stitches onto scrap yarn or a stitch holder on the second sock at the same time as I did it on the first sock. So actually I've done that. So doing the second sock will be easier, because I will have my circulars for picking up all the stitches, which means I can just whack them down onto the cable and I've got that movement and flexibility. But I have to say, still, unless you're desperately looking for a particular effect on your heels, I cannot understand why anybody does this. The appeal completely eludes me. I don't like picking up stitches from a lifeline at the best of times. I've found lifelines ever since I discovered them a few weeks ago. They've saved me numerous times. But that's fine. That's a case of use one or lose your piece of knitting, which could potentially be three quarters of a jumper. So that's okay. That's just one of those things you have to do. But using one in this situation, I mean, come back Flegel heel, all is forgiven. And unless they do something incredible for my husband when he puts them on his foot, I can't see why I would do them. And of course, bear in mind, he hasn't tried them on yet, so, properly with the constructed heel. So I don't even know if after all this, they're going to fit him as nicely as the normal socks that I do. So wow, that's been quite an experience. I'm kind of glad I've done it, in that at least I understand now what's involved, and I'm certainly not going to be thinking what if. So that's been quite a heady experience, and one that I'm going to be quite glad to finish, if I'm honest. Well, I was going to say, on a cheerier note, but I'm not absolutely sure it is. Last week, I was talking about knitting myself a hat. And pretty much as soon as I'd got the podcast up, I decided to have a go at this. And I was going to need 3.5 millimetre circulars. And 3.5 is the smallest size of the set of Knit Pro circulars, the Symphony set that my husband bought me on Valentine's Day last year. He knows the way to my heart. And I was just, how many times have I screwed needles into cables before? I was just screwing a needle into the cable and it snapped. It snapped right off at the base of the metal shank. I sat there staring at it, somewhat in disbelief that had actually just happened. I was horrified. And I took a photograph of it and I posted it on Instagram, and I sort of said, look what just happened. And I did say, because it's true, I've had two or three funnies with these, with Knit Pros now. I ordered one set of short tips that were actually faulty when they arrived, and the vendor replaced them for me without a murmur. And in fact, to her credit, the first set she sent me as a replacement didn't actually arrive, and I was quite embarrassed saying, oh, I'm really sorry, but I haven't received them yet. She said, oh, I did send them. I'll send them again. And fortunately, it took a while, but that second set did arrive, just some glitch. And anyway, I've got them and it's fine. But I was really shocked. So I posted on Instagram and I referenced Knit Pro's username in my comments. And to their eternal credit, they got back to me immediately and said, really sorry to hear this. You're entitled to a free replacement. Go through your original vendor in the first instance, or if that's not possible, message us through the Knit Pro group on Ravelry and we'll follow it up. And I was really, really impressed, and I was glad that that was public so that other people who follow me, because I got quite a lot of interest in that post, I think a few other people have had a similar experience, people were able to see that they'd done this. And someone was saying, that's fantastic, that's really tremendous that they've proactively contacted you. And I totally agree it was. And someone else was saying, oh, this has happened to me too, da da da. And I said, oh well, have you seen, they've said that they'll replace them. And she said, oh no, I hadn't noticed that. Oh great, so there you go, happy customer. However, that was a week ago, and I have messaged them through the Ravelry site, the Ravelry Knit Pro group, and I haven't heard anything back yet. So I'm kind of hoping that that's just they're very busy and that they will get back to me, because I can't go through our original vendor because it was an Amazon purchase, and any return or replacement option on that particular purchase has been shut down on Amazon. It was my husband who bought them, so he sort of tried to follow it up for me but found that the doors were shut. So I'm optimistic that Knit Pro will come through on it, but at the moment it's something I feel I'm still having to chase up a bit. And you know, the long and short of it is, I don't have my needles. So anyway, that kind of put paid to getting on with the hat there and then. And the next day I had to take my daughter for a hospital appointment in Hereford, nothing serious. And she took quite an amusing photograph of me. I was sitting there knitting in the reception area, and I didn't realise at the time, we were chatting as well, I don't ignore her at the hospital, so knit. Just to clear up any possible confusion there. But she, while I was knitting, we were talking, and I knew she had her phone out. I didn't realise she'd taken a picture of me, and she put one of these Snapchat filters on it. So, and it's quite funny. I'll put it on the show notes. It looks, we look like the knitting pirate. I quite like it. It's quite glam actually. Red lipstick they've over put on it and everything, and I think that looks quite amusing. Anyway, while we were in Hereford, we don't get into Hereford all that often, it's about half an hour away from us, so it's not a sort of daily destination, we went into Primark because she needed a few things, and I was still I was going to need a hat, and I wasn't confident by this stage I was going to have time to knit myself one if I was just even waiting for the needles to arrive, and I had just over a week left to go. And in Primark they had one of these Margot Ledbetter hats I was talking about last week for £2. I couldn't really turn it down. And it's rather fabulous. It's got a great big floppy brim and a black bow, but it's quite fun. And I was a bit nervous that it would get crushed to buggery in my packing, but I've managed to pack it round with things. So I've kind of abandoned. I think that idea of hat in a DK could be interesting for the winter. I was never entirely convinced about DK for the summer, especially as I have lots of hair. But the actual pattern I still think might be quite interesting to do. So I think I will try that at some point. I didn't get any reply from the airline as to whether I could take any knitting in the cabin, so I've kind of given up on that. I've just decided it's going to be a 5-day break from knitting. There's going to be so much going on and so many people. My family's brilliant. We're not one of these families that sit and sort of snarl and glare at each other. Everyone gets on really well, and it's just going to be so lovely to have a really prolonged amount of time to just catch up with everybody. I think I'll cope without knitting for 5 days. I'm still looking for recommendations for somewhere to go in Budapest that sells nice knitting notions, because I'd love to come back with something like that as a souvenir. So I'll have to do some digging about. I did try searching, but I didn't really come up with anything. As well as no knitting for 5 days while I'm away, I've worked out I'm not going to be at my knitting group for 7 weeks. It was going to be 5 weeks because I didn't go last week because I took my daughter into Hereford, and the next session, it's not every week, the next session is literally the morning after I get back from Hungary, and I get back at about midnight. So I think it would be a little bit mean, particularly on my husband, who will have just had sole care of the children for 5 days. If I just disappear off the next morning. Bye, everybody, I'm just off to my knitting group. I know it's entirely understandable to want to do that, but somehow I don't think I'm going to get away with it. So that's going to be another couple of weeks before I get to do it. In the introduction, I mentioned knitting for animals. Now, this is a complete daft gimmick, so much for being mostly about the projects. I saw this morning on Twitter, I saw a link, excuse me, I'm just faffing around, bringing up the article, I saw a link to an article about a feather tail glider in Australia. I presume she's a marsupial. There's a tiny feather tail glider. I imagine it being some kind of flying squirrel, and she has fallen out of her mother's pouch. She weighs a gram, and there's a photograph of one of the zookeepers holding her. She's in the Australian Zoo Wildlife Hospital. And this person is holding this tiny little dot of a creature, and they've put her in a knitted replacement pouch. And I just thought that was so cute. I mean, the pouch is about 20 times as big as her. And I thought that was fantastic. I'll put links to all these articles on the show notes, but it just set me thinking about all the different situations when people knit for animals. And the two things that came to mind in particular are the jumpers for the little penguins. I have had the immense privilege of going to Phillip Island and seeing the little penguins. Are they a dailies? Quickly scans article, can't quite remember. Anyway, they're very small, whether they're formally little or not, I'm not sure. They're very small. And it's fantastic. You go down onto the beach at dusk, and at least when I did it, it was got to be 15, 20 years ago now. And you sit on these bleachers on the beach, and you sit there and you think nothing's happening. For the first time in the dawn of creation, just because I'm here, the penguins aren't coming out of the sea. And then they start. And it's just the most magical experience. I absolutely loved it. But if there's ever been an oil spill or anything like that, and they have to scrub the penguins, you know, they lose that. They lose many of the qualities of their coats that keep them warm and dry. So there's a market for these little knitted coats, and the one that just charmed the socks off me is somebody made one in the colours of the classic penguin book covers, you know, the orange stripe, white stripe, orange stripe. I just thought that was absolutely brilliant. And I found an article, and I will link to it because it includes a link to the pattern. And it says here, if your masterpiece arrives at a time when the Penguin Foundation is overstocked, the organisation will use them in educational programmes and sell them in fundraisers. I just love that. I just think that's all absolutely wonderful. And the other type of knitting for animals, I'm not talking here about cats and dogs, they don't need it, but ex-battery hens, they get terrible trouble with pecking in these battery environments, and there's various patterns around for making knitted coats for these hens while their own feathers, after they've been, I say rescued, that possibly sounds a little more militant than I intend, but when they come to the end of their laying life, they become available for people to rehome. We have hens. We don't have ex-battery hens, but we have hens. One of the reasons that we don't have ex-battery hens, she said, feeling the need to justify herself, is that I read that they're not good for beginners, for beginner hen keepers. I wouldn't call us beginners now, to be fair, and we've just got into the habit of getting our hens from the same place every so often, but it was suggested that because they can have various health and readjustment issues, they're not ideal for beginners because you may need to solve all sorts of health and behavioural problems. And clearly, as a beginner hen keeper, you're not best positioned to do that. So I've never needed to knit masterpieces for my hens, but there's these really quite amusing photographs. This hen looks like she's about ready to take off into orbit. She's magnificently positioned. So I just thought that was all rather amusing. I've never done it. I've thought, oh, that would be great. Yeah, I must do that sometimes. But I'm never, it, just the same as the knitted knockers. I'm always thinking, oh, they'd be great. but I never actually get around to doing it. I probably need to start some kind of sad knitting calendar or something. If I call it a project list, it doesn't sound sad, does it? Maybe that's what I need to do. I do love a good list. I've still got one job to do before I go away. My packing's nearly done, but I may have implied last week that blocking this cloth I'm taking for my aunt could be ever so slightly a last minute issue. Well, yesterday I thought I'm going to do it. I was going to do my ironing on Sunday, but time just ran away with me. Too many things to do. Partly because we had to do teacher presents. My son and I made biscotti for his teachers, apricot and almond biscotti, which we wrapped up with a bag of fresh coffee for his teacher and the TA. So that sort of took up the block of time I would have spent ironing on Sunday. So I thought, oh, I'll do it on Monday. So I went to do it yesterday, knitted two things, and all of a sudden it stopped creating steam. And I got my husband to glare at it, which normally makes any piece of technology just roll over in submission, but it didn't do the job. Long and short of it was, I had to run into town after school yesterday and get a 6 quid iron from Morrison's, because we need it for quite a few things at the moment. My husband is off to my stepdaughter's graduation later this week, and he needs a crisply ironed shirt for that. But also, he's decided he's going to wear a particular linen suit he has, and he wants to take up the trousers. So he's quite capable of doing it, thank God, but he needs the iron for that to make sure that he's got everything positioned where he needs. So I'm actually now at the back of the queue. I'm waiting for him to finish with all that, and then I will block this cloth. And it is obviously the hottest day of the year. And not only have I done baking this morning, I made a seed cake because I've got book group here tomorrow, but I need to do steam ironing. So that was really well planned, wasn't it? There you go. I'm obviously, my mind is already on my fun holidays and not my domestic tasks. I think that's everything for this week. There won't be a podcast next Tuesday, depending on how next week rolls, because of course it's summer holidays by then, which doesn't prevent me recording, but just means I've got other things on my hands. I'll see. I may do a podcast later in the week, or I may just leave it until the following Tuesday, because I'm not going to be getting any knitting done while I'm away, so I probably won't have a great deal to say. Believe that if you will. So thank you very much, and I look forward to speaking to you in a couple of weeks. Bye.